The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon. How are you on this Thursday afternoon? If you want to contact the programme, 51551 for your text, or you can send us emails to ray@rte.ie, or you can use snail mail. Yes, the old-fashioned way. We got a package in today from Anne Weldon, and it's the first calendar, the first 2021 calendar. And I suppose seeing a calendar for next year is more important than ever before. We all just want to get rid of 2020, don't we? Oh, let it be behind us and everything that happened. Thank you very much. So thanks, Anne Weldon, for brightening up our day with the Alzheimer Society of Ireland 2021 calendar. And last year, it happened by accident, actually, but we started to do, you know, a sort of a review of calendars. We got loads of them in. It was great crack because there's so many charity calendars around the country, and we were delighted to give each and every one of them a mention over, I think it was mostly around November into December last year. So Anne has started the ball rolling this year, and it's a lovely collection, Anne, of photographs. There's a red-breast robin on the cover alongside a bee. And there's pictures, scenic pictures from all over the country. That's the Lee there. I recognise that. Just outside Cork. And I think that's in Chidani there. And there's loads of lovely photographs there. And it's all for a really good cause. And Anne used to do this off her own bat and sell them just around, because she's a volunteer for the Alzheimer's Society. But this year, the Society are selling them online on their store. If you go to alzheimer.ie, you can buy a copy of Anne's 2021 calendar. And she gets the award for the first calendar in this year. Well done, Anne. Thank you very much. And if you have a charity calendar and you want us to give it a mention on the show, well, you know, it's The Ray Darcy Show, RTE, Donnybrook, Dublin 4. I don't know the air code, actually. We should give an air code. What is the what? I wonder what our air code is. We'll have to find that out for you. Seeing as we're mentioning sort of end of year stuff and everything, Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop gift guide has been revealed this week. You know herself, Goop. We reviewed the Goop Lab. It was a series of six programmes that she put together on Netflix. And More Money Than Sense, it should be called, moremoneythansense.com, but it's called the goop.com, Goop gift guide. I'm just looking at some of the things that they're offering by way of separating you from your hard-earned cash. Toilet paper costing $34 a roll. Yeah, you heard me correctly. Toilet paper costing $34 a roll, called Number 2 Toilet Paper. And the tagline is toilet paper with a conscience. It's made of 100% sustainable bamboo. I don't know if I want to use bamboo toilet roll. I don't know about you. An eye for style. Note the chic dark floral packaging and a silky smooth texture that's gentle on skin. Need we say more? Yeah, you're having a laugh. $34 for a roll of toilet paper. The candle is back. You know, the one, this smells like my vagina candle. That's back, $75. You can get a Ouija board. Yeah, a Ouija board for $1,995. That'd be $5 short of $2,000. For $210 from Goop, you can purchase the Batard bread lamp. It's made from actual bread coated in resin. And it says to prevent any pests from getting at it. So you've a bread lamp. Why would you want a bread lamp? You can even buy a treehouse on goop.com, $110,000. There's a garlic press there, vibrators, electric bike for $2,916. It's all there if you've more money than sense. And while we're mentioning the C word, did we mention it yet? Congratulations to Tilly Christmas and Kieran White from Dorset in the United Kingdom, who got married on Tuesday. They've been together since they were 12. Tilly is 20. She doesn't say what age Kieran is. Did 15 guests, including the couple, at their reception. And here's the big thing. You've figured it out already. They've a double-barred name now. And Tilly has become Mrs. White Christmas. Yay, Mrs. White Christmas. She says, it's a surname I've grown up with, referring to Christmas. Well, of course you have. And loving it too. And I wanted to keep the name going. It just so happens the man I'm marrying has the perfect surname to go with it. So, the White Christmases. Yeah. And they say they were asked how they got together initially. He fell head over heels for me. He actually fell over and headbutted my feet. After that, we became great friends and eventually boyfriend and girlfriend and now married. So congratulations to them. Yesterday, we were speaking to Maria Ryan about her fully decorated Christmas tree, which has the lights and baubles on it since 1995, 25 years ago. And Maria was wondering if it is a record. And we got a number of correspondents throughout the programme yesterday. And just before we left you, Anne-Marie from Roscommon was on. She says, my mother Bridie has a 3-foot Christmas tree fully decorated with lights, tinsel and baubles. And it's left that way in the wardrobe until it's taken out just before Christmas. And your mum wasn't the only person who puts the Christmas tree in the wardrobe. The cobwebs are shook off and then put into the front porch for the Christmas. That's the tree, not the cobwebs. Afterwards, it's put back into the wardrobe until the next year. She moved into her house in 1979, which is 41 years ago. And she probably did it every year since. Sadly, Mam passed away in September. And no one lives in the house now, but I think we will have to take that tree and light up the porch this year. Of course you will, in memory of your mum. But you've beaten Maria Ryan's record there. Sorry about your ma. But as Maria was saying yesterday, because her ma died in 1995, that the Christmas tree was a lovely connection to her mother after she got over the initial grief, and also it kept her memory alive for them. So there you go. Eileen has been on to RAID.RTE.ie. Just a bit of an update on my story, State of Happiness, page 140 of A Page of My Life. I really enjoyed the launch last Thursday, but in truth, my head and heart was pulled between listening to the wonderful stories and the hospital in Stavanger, or it could be Stavanger, in Norway, where our first grandchild, who wasn't due to arrive till mid-November, also decided to launch himself into this strange but yet still wonderful world. Frederick Joseph Gannon was the inspiration for my story. I look forward to being a nana and to all the joys that I know Freddie will bring to his mum and dad, Claire and Paul, and all of us. So what a coincidence. Freddie and A Page for My Life were both launched on the 29th of October, and we're both available to be loved and appreciated on 30th of October. Again, many thanks for all this opportunity, and to Laura Lynn for their wonderful work, says Eileen. Congratulations on becoming a grandparent. And the book was all about their connection to Norway and how they started watching Scandinavian dramas, probably to feel closer to their son and daughter-in-law, or daughter and son-in-law, who live in Norway. And who's this? Is there a name on this one? I just go to the end of this. There is. Zelly Driscoll. How are you doing, Zelly? Warm greetings. I was feeling very low a few weeks ago when I realised that my husband and I wouldn't be able to visit our grandchildren who live abroad, as we usually do every October. Then I realised that while the government was improving their testing and tracing strategies, I could do something to help myself and maybe also help others during these strange, strange times. I wanted to stay connected as I stayed apart from people. So I started a campaign called Bridge of Smiles. This is my way of staying connected as I stay apart. Every time I pass someone in the street or I'm served in a shop, even when I don't feel like it, I say silently to myself, from my heart to yours, I'm sending a smile. May you experience some peace and calm in your life today. Isn't that lovely? From my heart to yours, I'm sending a smile. May you experience some peace and calm in your life today. I've told some friends about this campaign, and many of them have started their own wee Bridge of Smiles. They put their own words on their smile as they send it across to another person. Now, I'm not a naturally smiley person. I'm actually quite an anxious person who has to remind myself to smile and give to the world what I'd love to get from it. As I age, I really appreciate a bit of kindness and compassion. Even a smile helps. And Zelly includes the science behind a smile. So here it is. For over 2,500 years, Taoists have been using the smile in meditation practices. So they must have known that we can be changed by a simple smile. The discovery of neuroplasticity has proven them right. A smile releases dopamine and other feel-good hormones, which can not only lift our spirits, but help calm us. I now think of a smile as being like a lighthouse, which lights up my heart and mind and shines light into the darkness of other people's hearts and minds. Remember, and we've heard this before, but it's worth repeating, it takes 44 muscles to frown and only 12 to smile. So smiling can be a free beauty treatment. A few weeks ago, the poet Jez Albera gave me permission to use his poem called Smile in my Bridge of Smiles campaign. It's a short poem and it rhymes, so I'll read it for you very quickly. By Jez Albera, Smile. Smiling is infectious, you catch it like the flu. When someone smiled at me today, I started smiling too. I passed around the corner and someone saw my grin. When he smiled, I realised I'd passed it on to him. I thought about that smile, then I realised it's worth a single smile just like mine could travel around the earth. So if you feel a smile begin, don't leave it undetected. Let's start an epidemic quick and get the world infected. Isn't that lovely? Thanks, Jez. Thanks, Sally. Have to play this. Just a little bit. Ah, here's one. Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Bring me sunshine.
Markman Wise, bring me sunshine. Hopefully that'll lift your spirits. Just a quick reminder, Alison Keating and Ray O'Neill are with us after, no, just before 4 o'clock, and they are our relationship counsellors. So if you need a bit of free advice on some relationship woes, get them into us now, ray@rte.ie, and Alison and Ray, who always give sound advice, will be here to deal with your relationship woes just before 4 o'clock today. Seemingly, you don't have an error code in RTE, says Paul. Olive, yeah, I don't think you have an error code. Why? Why? What do we want, an error code? When do we want it now? According to Google Maps, RTE didn't appear to have an error code. And I was going to say, who needs an error code for RTE? Sure, everyone knows where it is. And then remember, my partner ran Dublin City Marathon 4 times before she noticed the RTE mast. I was saying, it's great to see the mast and know you've less than 5K to go. And she said, what mast? Where? It's hard to miss, Paul, but I suppose if you've run 20 miles, you know, looking up in the air to see the RTE mast is the last thing on your mind. Jer has been on, do not put that 2021 calendar up anywhere until the 1st of January. It's really bad luck. Don't do it! Exclamation mark. Thanks for that advice. Here, yes. Our quiz of today. 10 questions on the 5th of November from over the centuries and the decades and the years. Big stories, scientific breakthroughs, songs, movies, births and deaths. They're all in there. 5 questions each for 2 contestants after 4 o'clock. And one of them will win a 2-night stay at the K Club with breakfast on both mornings, plus 3 hours and lunch in the new K Golf World, a sophisticated suite of state-of-the-art standalone golf simulators with 8 spacious high-tech bays and backed with the exceptional 5-star service and attention to detail of the K Club. More at kgolfworld.ie. So, if you want to be involved and come on and try your luck at our quiz of today, here is your qualifying question. How many counties are in the province of Connacht? How many counties are in the province of Connacht? 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. And the question, how many counties are in the province of Connacht? And we could be talking to you after 4 o'clock. And also after 4 o'clock, I'm looking forward to speaking to author and comedian David Baddiel. He's always good company, and we'll be talking to him after 4 o'clock. Now, 515 on radio.rt.ie. Good afternoon. Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel. Come up and see me, make me smile. On RT Radio 1, 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. While out for my daily walk past a house in Glasnevin in Dublin, all decorated outside with Christmas decorations and a holly wreath on the front door. Well, people are arguing because we've had such a ridiculously bad year that you should put up your decorations early. And then other people are saying, no, wait till December the 8th. Darren, who's listening in Canada, has been on. He says, every time I hear about Gwyneth Paltrow's goop, I'm reminded about the Harry Enfield sketch called I Saw You Coming, in which he works in an antique gift shop and sells rubbish and inflated prices to gullible people with more money than sense. Sketches are on YouTube. Yeah, I saw you coming. What's that one? Yeah, they must have had a big window in that shop where you bought that thing. If you see someone without a smile on their face, give them yours, says Tom in Dundrum. That's nice. And Sally Driscoll's email about her Bridge of Smiles is a lovely thing. And because you do, it's infectious. It is infectious. The other thing, and I've probably told you about this before, that brilliant book, The Art of Happiness with the Dalai Lama and a psychiatrist whose name I can never remember. One of the things in it is fake it till you make it. So even if you don't feel like smiling, you can actually force yourself to smile. And then if you do that to somebody, then their smile in return will be a genuine one, which will make you smile genuinely. And then it becomes an epidemic. That's how it works. Re-funnied married names. My mate, Olive Casey, married John Voiles. She's now Olive Voiles, as in Popeye. Get it? Yeah. My friend from work was going out with a lovely guy whose surname was Deer. We told our friend they could never get married because the name would be hilarious. They did get married and her name is Lorraine. Listen to show while sewing, says Frida. Lorraine dear, Lorraine dear, Lorraine dear. Does anybody get Lorraine dear? It'll come to me eventually. According to Air Code Finder, the air code for RT is DO4P9N2. And we checked this and it seems to be the air code for the RT creche. So we can't find an air code for RT. We have put a query into the Department of the Environment, Climate and Communications and we're asking them, is there an air code for RT? If there is, what is it? And if there isn't, why isn't there one? So I know it's very exciting and I know you can't wait to find that. It's that and the result of the US presidential election that are keeping you on the edge of your seat. Does RT have an air code and who's going to win the presidential election? The two big questions of the day. Anyway, 51551 Ray at RTE.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 for your texts. Now, DIY SOS was a huge success and hopefully it will be back at some time in 2021. And Baz was brilliant in it and we spoke to him ahead of the first programme, which featured Amy Mulcahy and her mum and redoing her house. Because Amy was using, or still is using, a wheelchair. Anyway, one of the, I suppose, accidental stars of that episode of DIY SOS was one of the volunteer builders called Tiny. Now, Tiny weighs in at 23 stone and stands at 6'2" tall. He's nearly as wide as he's tall. And his real name is Pa Dwyer. And this Saturday, Pa is going to be flying out to Florida to fly the flag as the second Irishman ever to compete in the world's strongest man event. How are you doing, Pa?
How are you keeping?
Good. So Tiny, your friends don't know you by Tiny, do they?
Well, they didn't, but it's starting to stick.
Is it, yeah?
It is, yeah.
Was that Baz Ashmawe? Was he responsible for it?
That was Baz, no, exactly. I must catch up with Baz and pay him back for that one.
Yeah. What struck me about you was that it was filmed sometime in February before lockdown and you were going around in a cap sleeve T-shirt.
Oh, yeah, sure. It was, I think the same day it was 8 degrees, so it was roasting, you know. So what else would you be wearing when it's that warm?
Yeah. Well, you have to show off those guns of yours and the tats and all that sort of thing. So remind us of your CV when it comes to strongest man competitions.
So, well, I'm the current All-Ireland strongest man. I'm the Ireland strongest man with the last 4 years.
Right, okay.
I was UK strongest man in 2018. 6-7 weeks ago, I was sixth in Europe strongest man. And my display there is what kind of got me called for the world strongest man.
Okay.
So I'll be flying for the world strongest.
Is this an invitation event?
It's invitation or qualifier.
Right.
So I didn't actually get to do any of the qualifiers because of the current climate, because there was only one in, there was two in America, there was a couple of others out farm that I couldn't get to, and there was Europe's Strongest Man, and top three from Europe's are straight away invited.
Yeah.
So just down to my display and being Ireland's Strongest Man with the last couple of years, they said they'd bring me on for the crack.
Did you hold me over your head at one stage? No, that wasn't you, somebody else.
I don't think so. I can if you want, though.
So I watched these. For some reason, they're compulsive viewing when you start watching the Strongest Man competitions. So you pull cars and you lift boulders and all sorts of things.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, it's one of the most entertaining sports I think out there, because it's not every day you see a man pulling a 25-ton truck over the course of 20-30 meters. We lift logs as big as trees and weighing as heavy. Like, some of the logs we lift are over 200 kilos, we're lifting these things over our head. You know, a normal person wouldn't be able to pick it off the ground, and we throw it over our head and give a big smile. You know,
but it's
every competition these days, because like 10 years ago, you were dealing with strong guys, you know, and today's competitions, you're dealing with actual athletes. These guys are training year round to become the world's strongest man, because it's kind of come away from the entertainment side of things and more into the sport side of things. Do you know what I mean?
Right. And Pa, so, tell me this. Was when you were younger, did you say, when I grew up, I want to be the strongest man in the world?
Well, I grew up in a farm, so I had that whole natural strength inside me anyway, you know.
Yes, shoveling, you were shoveling throwing bales around the place and all sorts of things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And how are you feeling ahead of the competition?
I'm feeling strong, you know. I'm probably the strongest I've ever been. I'm just over, I'm about 146 kilos, which would be 23 and a half, close to 24 stone. So training has been very hard for this, because obviously when you're training for the World's Strongest Men, it's the heaviest and hardest competition in the world. So training for this has been tough. I've enjoyed the training though, but what I don't enjoy is the diet.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a moment. But would you say you're ripped? Would that be fair enough to say? That's what they say, isn't it?
The only ripped I do is ripping pants, ripping shorts.
Right. So the diet then, right. This morning, what you have for breakfast?
This morning I was up at 5:45 and I sat down to have my first meal at 6 o'clock. It was 15 eggs and a bowl of porridge.
And how do you cook the eggs?
I go through different phases just to make it easier to eat. So this morning it was poached.
Hold on. 15 poached eggs?
Yeah.
Mixed with what?
Nothing. I just sprinkle a bit of salt in, because it's not eating for me. It's just function.
Yeah.
It's functional. This is just a part of my training. To me, getting up at 6 o'clock this morning and eating that first meal is training.
Okay.
I'm not sitting down because I'm hungry. You know, I've been at this a while. I haven't been hungry in over 5 years.
And do you have the poacher, or do you make them in water?
A big massive pan of water, and just throw my eggs into it and boil them and take them out and eat them.
All right, and you do the swirly thing with a bit of vinegar to make sure they're perfectly formed.
No, I wouldn't think so. Doesn't really bother me.
No. Okay, so that was your first meal. Then second meal
then is 10 ounces of beef, or it's venison actually these days, and sometimes it's actual horse meat, but it's mainly venison what I'm having at the minute. With either baby potatoes or pasta with veg. The following meal after that then is chicken. And I'll have two of those meals then today. So two chicken meals, two venison meals. And my last meal then at night is a shake, which consists of about 1,800 calories.
So that's six meals a day.
It is, yeah. It's six heavy meals. So it comes in around about 9,000 calories at the minute. That's excluding snacks as well, so...
And then what's the average intake? Is it 2,000? Is it calories?
2,200, yeah.
Yeah, and you have to do more than four times that.
About four times that, yeah. Because, see, I have a fast metabolism. Whereas some of the other guys I'm coming up against are natural, sitting at 25 stone, you know. The likes of the Mountain from Game of Thrones, like when he competes at... Like, he's nearly 7 foot tall, he competes at nearly 32 stone, and he is ripped. You can see abs. To see abs in a 32 stone man is something else.
Yeah, he's a giant, isn't he?
He is a giant, yeah, but all these giants.
So he makes you look small, Pa.
He makes me look small, yeah.
Janie Mackers.
So I call him Tiny.
Well, you got a great reaction on Gogglebox on Virgin Media One. They showed a clip from DIY SOS, the first episode. And this is the various families looking and seeing you for the first time. Here we go. Original cute body
makeup on model. What are you?
I am about 23 stone.
Johnny Mack, look at him. He's some bio, isn't he?
Yeah. Is he not frozen though? It's February.
I'm not 23 stone anyway, so I'm only 17.
Yeah, but he's all muscle.
All right, stop loving him, Laura, all right?
I went to Wonderfield Go for breakfast baguette and you didn't. And I was thinking, oh, he actually watches what he eats.
I'm watching my figure.
I'm watching it as well, pet.
God, look at them shoulders. I'm in love.
Neat ass as well.
Yeah.
A neat ass. Barbara and Janet from Donegal.
I couldn't disagree with her.
Yeah. You must come into us on the den when you come back. You have to isolate on the way over and isolate on the way back.
I do, yeah. So when I get back, I'm going to isolate. And when I have that done... I will come on the den with you then, and I can lift you over my head then if you want.
Great. Look forward to it. Listen, good luck in the World's Strongest Man event. It's happening in Florida over the coming weeks, and it'll be on the telly over the Christmas. I think that's where I must have seen it last year. You know, you'd be sitting around between...
It's always on TV around Christmas. Yeah.
In the afternoon. It's a good watch too. Pa, great talking to you.
Thanks a million, Ray.
Okay, 15 poached eggs. Janie Macker. See you, good luck.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I thought it'd be pretty straightforward just to get an air code for RTE. Mary says air code for RTE admin building is DO4P297, Montrose House is DO4P9N2, Mount Errol House and Library Building, same code also. And then Caroline says, they do have an air code. You have 12 of them, in fact. So we're trying to see if there's an air code for the radio building. I know it's very exciting. I know. This is stressing you out in the afternoon. Brian has been on. He says, I married Amy O'Toole last year, my surname being Kit. She could go by Amy O'Toole Kit. Amy, I like that. I like it. Now, a big part of the school year for the last 33 years for schools around Ireland has been the MS Readathon, where children were asked to read books, get sponsored and raise funds for the MS Society of Ireland. Well, it's going online this year, like most things, it's going virtual. But we spotted when they sent us in their press release that I was involved in a readathon event 25 years ago where we buried a time capsule at the Irish Writers Museum. And it's to stay there for another 25 years. So we're halfway through it. It's to be there for 50 years. And two of the people who were there with me 25 years ago are on the line. Zita Hamilton, how are you?
Hi.
Good to talk to you again.
You too.
I'd recognise your voice anywhere. And David O'Brien. Hello, David.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk to you. Yeah. So Zita, what do you remember about that time capsule burying event?
Oh, God. Well, I was 11, I think, when I just turned 11. And I remember parts of it really well. I remember putting the books in and closing the capsule and burying it. And I remember the photo with you. But that's kind of, I don't really remember too much more of the ceremony.
Yeah, so there's a sort of bronze plaque on the top and it says, the Multiple Sclerosis Society of Ireland time capsule, 18 Irish children's books buried here on the 27th of September 1995 to be opened on the 27th of September 2045, sponsored by Bus Éireann. I probably said at the time I was unlikely to be around. I'm just thinking, would I be around in 2045? How many years is away? 25 years? Ah, yeah, probably. Hopefully I might be around. What do you remember about it, David?
I was probably one of the older kids in it, I think, at the time. So I was 14, I think. And I remember the excitement of going in for the day. And I remember going through the process of putting the stuff in. And I remember them reading a few of the stories out as well and announcing all the winners. And I thought, oh, it's very exciting. And then the burial itself and out in the garden there in the Writers' Museum, which I went back to a few years ago to see it. So it was a lovely little garden still there.
So there were books and there was also a collection of stories. And you wrote one of them, did you?
Yes, we were the winners. We had written stories we put in for a competition and we were the winners of the stories. They were compiled into a book that was submitted, that was published then.
Rightio, yeah. What do you do now, David?
I'm an orthopaedic surgeon.
Right. And what do you do, Zita? I'll just get Zita's CV before we go back to you.
Nothing anywhere near as exciting as an orthopaedic surgeon. I have a degree in nutrition from UCD and I had started a PhD and then babies came along. So
all right.
Kind of derailed that part of my career.
Okay. How many babies?
Yeah. I have a 4.5-year-old and an almost 2-year-old.
Good stuff. So David, sorry for cutting across you there. So an orthopaedic surgeon.
Yeah.
And where do you practice your trade?
I was working in Waterford and Kilkenny and then a year ago moved to the Mater Hospital and Kappa Hospital in Dublin. And so I work principally there. But I'm up and down the country a little bit between Kilkenny and Waterford as well.
Okay. And what about writing? Was that something you wanted to do or did you just enter the competition for the laugh?
No, I enjoyed it, but it wasn't something I did an awful lot of.
Right.
And it just I had a teacher at the time who had our class, our English class, Miss Nolte was her name, and she had the class all write a story and then suggested that that a few of us put them together to send them in. And so that was how we ended up up submitting it.
Because both of you did science based subjects. Zita, you did nutrition in the end.
Yeah.
So not you weren't drawn towards English and literature and all that?
I really enjoyed it in school. I did, before the writing competition, I'd done a good, like, maybe two or three of the readathons, like, the years before.
Yeah.
And I used to do a lot of kind of kind of short story writing, like as a kid, but not as an adult. No, I kind of.
And one of your heroes was there, Marita Conlon McKenna.
Oh yeah, that's one of my big memories of the day. I was a bit starstruck. I remember feeling starstruck because I was a big fan of hers, and Under the Hawthorn Tree and Wildflower Girl, and yeah, I loved her books. So. Yeah,
and she was one of the authors whose book is in the capsule, which will be opened in 25 years' time.
Yeah, just looking exactly. At
Sebastian Barry was in there, Elsewhere by Sebastian Barry, Under the Hawthorn Tree, as you've mentioned, Circling the Triangle by Margaret Cruikshank, and then there was a book by Tom McGoughran, who used to work in here, When Stars Stop Spinning by Jane Mitchell, The Hiring Fair by Elizabeth O'Hara, and the list goes on. I'm wondering why, you know, from a distance, I'm wondering why they didn't put in other things other than books. You know, little trinkets from the time, because 50 years is a long time. It's put in a couple of cassettes and a Walkman and a paper and a magazine. Yeah, I wonder why they didn't do that. Anyway, there you go. That's just me. So we'll see you then for the opening in 25 years' time.
Hopefully, anyway.
Could
I just say hi to my three kids who are love reading the books? Owen, Cara, Maeve, who are down in Dunmore East, and enjoying all the books that they bring to bed with them every night. Yeah. Little library to the lot of them. So I can say hi to them.
Well, you've reminded me to just give out the website address, msreadathon.ie. And you know the deal, you sign up there, you read books, you get sponsored and you raise money for the MS Society of Ireland. And this year, in their 33rd year, they're encouraging parents to get involved as well. Probably because they have, you know, they're going virtual as well, so they can get to the parents as well outside of school. So get involved, it's a great cause and it's a great way to encourage your children to read books. You'll never be bored if you're reading a book. David, thank you very much. See you soon. Zita, thank you. Good luck. See you.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye now. Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now we've Alison Keating, our psychologist, and Ray O'Neill, our psychotherapist, on the line. Good afternoon to you both.
Hi, Ray.
Yeah, I miss you too. Been in here.
I know, we miss you too.
Yeah, it's always good to see you. Now, the last time you were in, before we went to level 5, we said that the next time you were on, we would talk about specifically pornography. So what we will do, because we need to give people warning about this, is that if there's anybody listening now who thinks they might have a problem with pornography, or they think their partner has a problem with pornography, and they want advice from Alison and Ray, they could get them into us now, ray@rte.ie, and we'll have two or three for the next time you're on. Okay, so, and we'll give people warning about that and I'll mention it again. But for the moment, the ones that came in today, first one here, dear Ray and Alison, do 50-year-old men go through midlife crisis and how can they be helped? My husband is obsessing over someone who's 10 years younger, who's telling him what he wants to hear, and he's on the verge of leaving to have an affair with her, and I don't know what to do. Alison, I'll go to you first.
Okay, so yes, absolutely. Maybe 50 is a new 40 for the midlife crisis. And maybe there's good reason for it. I think people at 50 feel physically kind of very well. They can be quite healthy. So, but it can be a time where you kind of feel kind of disconnected from yourself or your family or your relationships. There can be a level of distress, questioning the purpose of your life. Is this it? And people kind of look to how many years they have left. So I think it's quite common from any age up to 65 and beyond. It's interesting that it comes in from the wife. So I'm wondering, you know, what type of conversation they are having. Has he actually said he's going to have the affair and he's going to leave? Or, you know, are they going to counselling together? I'm hearing it from her perspective, but I wonder, does he feel he's having a midlife crisis?
Yeah, it's an odd wording. He's on the verge of leaving to have an affair. Mm. It's not something, you don't go, listen, I'm thinking of having an affair. What do you think?
But maybe in fairness, maybe he has actually done that. Maybe he has actually said, you know what, look, I'm really unhappy and I'm thinking about having an affair. And we're making an assumption on that.
Yes.
Or maybe she's feeling threatened. But I suppose it's hard to work out what actually is really going on here, but it's all about bringing back to what's going on for him, what's going on for her, And if he's going to leave, honestly, there really is nothing that she can actually do. And I mean, the sexual part is a huge betrayal, but people can psychologically and emotionally leave, you know, marriages a long time before they actually physically go.
Yes.
So it's just worth having a conversation together, figuring out what's actually going on. You know, is there boredom or dissatisfaction, or what issues are actually there at the moment?
And Ray, in your work, do you come across men having midlife crisis?
Of course, you know, because exactly for what Alison is saying, just, you know, once we get to midlife, you know, you're in the second half. And so, you know, the imminence of death and mortality haunts and scares us. And so many people want to live before they die. But unfortunately, some people make really bad choices and decisions. What I find interesting in this one is, and this is why I like myself and Alison doing this, is because we see different things. Because I'm wondering if the husband has told her, or whether she's been looking at emails or phones,
yes.
And is putting together pieces and creating a story. Because in the silence, because there is silence in this relationship, whatever the real story is, in silence we tend to create nightmares. So if she suspects, or indeed if she feels she has evidence, please talk to him about it, because a bit like in the kind of porn conversation that we're going to have, a lot of people enjoy fantasy just as fantasy. They don't confuse it with reality, where she's decided he's on the verge of leaving to have this affair, and we've no other information. We're in the silence with her.
Mm.
My husband is obsessing over someone 10 years younger who's telling him what he wants to hear. And we've discussed this before as well. Of course, he's you know, he's in lust and he's in limerence, and he thinks that, you know, this is the way it's going to be forever. Of course, it won't be like that. You know, it'll become normal and maybe boring very quickly, and he'll probably rue the day that he decided to leave his wife. Or maybe not, I don't know. Just if people, I'm reading Love at the moment, which is Roddy Doyle's new book, and it's about two old friends going out for a drink, and one of them has started an affair. And they're having the chats as they get drunker, and it's an interesting one. Anyway, so what do we say to this woman then? So she needs to have the chat with him.
Yeah, like I'm also in agreement with Ray that we don't know what's going on in between the lines here, and then, you know, often our own fears and insecurities can be projected onto, like, if she feels disconnected from her husband, if she feels, and as Ray's saying, maybe it's come across emails or texts, which is a form of emotional kind of, you know, betrayal. It is, you know, she's feeling the disconnection already. So it's just about bringing up that distress that she's feeling, but having a conversation, seeing where you are, because I think the period of uncertainty beforehand is worse. It really is. And I'm not saying it wouldn't be awful if she finds out actually he does want to go, but he's not really there if this is how she's feeling at the moment.
Okay. And just a final question on this before we go to the next one. It's not that common, is it, for 50-year-old men to... Is it? Is it a phenomenon? It's just something new to me.
It's certainly... As someone approaching 50, I feel complicit in my own answer. You know, this is what I say about fantasy. Like, the husband could turn around and kind of go, oh, just look, that's Mary from work. I was only having a bit of crack. I thought it was a bit of harmless fun, which is easy for him to say. But until he understands her hurt, and until she hears his casualness, then they have a chance to have a conversation.
Okay, so the conversation is important. And in most cases, the conversation is important. Okay, second one then. Dear Ray and experts, that's you two. We sold our house during the summer and have bought another one which needed extensive renovations. Long story short, thanks to lockdown, etc., it took way longer than expected and we had to move out of the old one without having the new one ready. It was unlivable in, as it doesn't currently have a roof, so my husband's sister and husband kindly took us in. Things went south pretty quickly. And I just need some help keeping my cool. My sister-in-law is driving me cracked. I never realised what a control freak she is. She won't let me do any shopping of any kind because she says that she is the designated shopper in the house. I'd be afraid to bring a chocolate bar into the place. I do my best to keep the place as she has it, but after putting the dishes away the other day, I found a note saying that they were stacked incorrectly. Sorry. We had a birthday recently and I cut the cake incorrectly. Her face was like thunder when I didn't cut it into wedges like she told me after. I just cut it straight across. I offer to cook all the time, not allowed. As soon as I walk through the door, I have to tell her who I've interacted with that day, as she wants to keep appraised of close contacts. I'm doing all the usual deep breaths and reminding myself that it's not forever. My husband says that he doesn't want to get involved and just wants to keep the peace, but I'm afraid that I'm going to blow. Our house doesn't look like it will be ready this side of Christmas. Help! Yeah, there's comedy in there because I'm you know, looking at it from afar, but I'm sure if you're in the middle of it, it wouldn't be in any way funny. Ray?
I suppose around that, and it may seem like an obvious thing to say, but that the writer may hate me for saying this, but your sister-in-law is doing you a huge favour. I know she's being awkward or difficult as far as you're concerned, but I think if you can remember the thing to be grateful for, ahead of the things that annoy you, because in any relationship that are important to us, there are good things and difficult things. And sometimes we find the difficult things a little easier to manage or swallow or deal with when we remember the more important things. And bottom line, she's letting you, your husband, your family stay in the house. I'm presuming, well, even just staying, whether it's free of charge or whatever, holds that first and foremost. Yeah. She's being inconvenienced by you being there. It's her house, so if she wants to stack the plates in a certain order, which may seem strange to her, but to her that might be perfectly logical.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And you're in her house, and so as my parents used to always remind me, our house...
Our rules. You got cut off there. I'm sure you were saying our house, our rules, were you?
Our house, our rules.
Yes, yeah. I like what you say there, because I keep going back to, we spoke to Frank Greeley recently, and he was saying that you can't be negative if you're appreciative. So if you know, it's difficult to have the two things side by side. So if she can home in and concentrate on appreciating what her sister-in-law is doing for her, then she'll be less likely to be negative towards her. What do you say, Alison?
Rent. Oh, God, no, seriously.
Well, rent, I mean, so move out and rent. Yeah, sorry.
If it's even just for a month like that, you know, that the Christmas, I mean, I just see this as a catastrophe waiting to happen on Christmas. And I totally get what Ray is saying. However, it's very controlling, and I would be very curious as to the relationship they had before this. And she absolutely is letting her know that she not even is a guest, but she's an unwanted guest. So maybe the sister-in-law didn't actually want her there in the first place, and the husband said, come on, please. Mm-hmm. But it's so awkward. The worry I would have is that the damage to the relationship might be irrevocable, and her getting to a point of blowing could happen. I think the note is really passive-aggressive, you know? I mean, like, you know, you barely do that to a child. So it's kind of like she's the boss and you're the child. I just think, can there be, and also that her husband is kind of abdicating any responsibility, like, and it's all been left on her. So there's a very strong kind of negativity between the two women and the sister-in-law saying, I'm the woman and the designated boss of the house. But I think you can have some, like, you can be civil as well.
Yeah.
And if it's not working, I honestly would say, if possible, because I
rent,
think there'll be a hustle
and
a puff and blow the house
rent,
down,
rent,
you know?
Yeah, rent. I think I have to go with Alison on this one, Ray. No, because it is about, you know, the future and how this and these months will affect the relationship between this woman and her sister-in-law in the future. Because there's nothing worse than families falling out.
Mm. And I think that potentially is a place where you could meet her before it gets into an explosion. Like, obviously, if there's other options like renting, then that just makes sense. But if there isn't, to just the two couples to sit down, but to start with the gratitude.
Mm.
And to start in that place with, you know, God, look, I'm sure it's been really annoying, and I'm sure it's been an inconvenience, and I'm sure, which at some level they have put the sister-in-law out.
Of course
out.
They have, yes. Yeah.
And just meet in that place and just say, look, hopefully, and then you have a conversation. But when you go on the offensive, when you offend...
That's, yeah, you've ruined it, yeah. I think you've dropped out again there. He always drops out at the most inopportune times.
No, I just think when you go on the offensive, you cause offense.
Oh, you offend, yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were finished. Sorry, yes, yeah. Okay, so rent or else have an attitude of gratitude, and that might soften the whole situation. Thanks as always, Alison Keating and Ray O'Neill. We'll talk to you soon.
Cheers, Ray.
Thank you very much. Mind yourselves. Anish Tosh and Amna Fibskelta Nanokta. Gramagod, thank you very much. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Let's see what you're saying. A great idea of yours to get a page for my life going. I received my copy in the post and I just cannot leave it down. It's brilliant. So many different stories. Would love a longer version of some of the stories. And it's helping the Laura Lynn Foundation as well. Thanks a million, says Mary, Brendan and Carlo. Thank you, Mary, for buying it. We used to play a game when we were young, making up funny married names. If Mary Black married Paddy White, she'd be Mary Black White. Would she not be Mary Grey? Or if Ms. Stone married Mr. Wall, then she'd be Mrs. Stonewall. Or if Ms. Green married Mr. Fields, then she'd be Mrs. Greenfields. It used to pass hours and long journeys. It's like, oh, more innocent times back in the day. We play a game called rhyming. So you have to, just one person mentions a word and then the other person has to get a rhyme with it. So window, Nintendo, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah, that's, yeah, you can play that. I won't charge you for that one. Now, quiz of today. Today being the 5th of November, we've cobbled together 10 questions from events that happened on this day over the years. And we have a prize this week. A two-night stay at the K Club with breakfast on both mornings plus 3 hours and lunch in the new K Golf World. You can find out all about that at www.kgolfworld.ie. Who says www anymore? Me, sorry about that. On the line we have Deirdre Burke. How are you doing, Deirdre?
Hi, Ray.
Good to talk to you.
Same here.
Are you on a hands-free there or something? You sound
no,
just...
I'm not. I'm a bit echoey because it's the best signal in the house.
It's the which room?
It's a little porch at the back of the house where the best signal is.
Oh, right, the best signal, but it sounds cavernous, right? So you have to... Yeah, right, okay.
Sorry. So the guys are living out in East Galway.
There are pros and cons. Whereabouts, yes. Whereabouts in East Galway are you?
We're in a little town called Meelick, which... Park the Shannon, and where the nearest village is Aircourt, and the nearest town would be Pachamna one side, and then Banagher then is the nearest town the other side.
All right, so you're near the Shannon then?
Yes, we're very near the Shannon.
Yeah, Shannon, yeah.
Yeah, Tipperary, Offaly, and Galway, Meath and Meath.
Ah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah. I know who you are now. A nice part of the world, lovely part
of
the world.
Lovely, yeah. It's fine today as well. So
your line isn't great, Deirdre. I can make out.
Yeah, sorry, now.
It's the line's good, but it's the acoustics. So,
okay.
Yeah. So if you can move to some place that's less echoey and we'll see how we go there.
No, is that a bit better?
That is way better, Deirdre.
Thank you, that's great.
I have you now.
No,
great.
No, that's good.
Now we can have a chat. Okay, yes, so you work as a carer?
I work as a carer in the community, yes.
Right, okay. So you go into the houses of elderly people?
Yes, the elderly people and vulnerable people, yes, and... Collect messages, collect prescriptions, provide personal care, do the job for them.
Great. It must be a very rewarding job.
It is. It's lovely now, especially as I was saying to your researcher there, these challenging times for them where they are seeing not many family members maybe or no callers or such. So it's just to provide that bit of support for them and to see somebody every day as well, which is a huge thing for them.
Great, yeah. So you've been listening to the quiz when you collect Damien. What age is Damien?
Damien is 13 and he's in first year in Banagher College.
Right, that beats Banagher. And you've...
That beats Banagher as well.
Mairead is what age?
Mairead is 22 and she's in her final year down in Newell, but she's doing online now for a course.
What's she studying?
She's studying law and accountant and she wants to become law and accountancy with hoping to become an accountant.
Okay, and James is the eldest?
James is the eldest, and he'll be mortified now to hear Mammy on the radio at 24, and he's an engineer.
Right, he's an engineer. Great stuff. Okay, you're up against Danny Tiernan, who's in Boyle and County Roscommon. How are you doing, Danny?
How are you, Ray? How are things?
Good to talk to you.
And you?
You're a busy man.
I drive for Musgraves.
Right.
Deliver food. I'm doing Donegal at the moment, delivering to hospitals and nursing homes.
From
and
where?
Homes and
from where?
From Tuam Road in Galway.
Right, is that every day?
Yeah.
So tell us your day then.
I get up at about 2:45 and get ready. I hit off about 5 past 3, drive to Galway, it's about an hour and a half, and then about half, I'm here about half four, I load up the van and the truck or whatever and bring it with me. And I hit off on the run and I'm just back now. And I have an hour and a half to get home.
So you're back in Galway and then you have to drive to Boyle?
Yeah.
How many miles do you cover a day, Danny?
Oh, good God.
You've never figured it out. No, you never...
Well, it's about 350, 400 maybe.
Right. But you don't mind that because you're a determined man because you tried to get through 81 times yesterday to be on the quiz.
I'm a Kildare man like yourself.
Oh, are you? Where are you about to see from?
I was born in the Curra. Dad was in the army.
Oh, was he? So right. What rank was he?
He was a quartermaster.
Ah, so was my dad. There you go.
There you go now. Yeah. Clark Barracks.
Yeah.
That's where we lived, Mary Quarters. When they left then, they brought me with them. They wouldn't leave me behind.
Right. your dad and my dad, they were the people who had power in the army because they had control of boots.
Everything,
and uniforms
and, boots, yeah.
And berets and shirts and all that sort of thing.
Caps and rifles and ammunition. The whole lot. Yeah.
So the three of us, my two brothers and I, were in the FCA and we were the best dressed three. In the
I retired the commandant about in 2010.
Oh, from the FCA?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Reserve, yeah. There you go. Yeah. Right.
No.
Okay, you're up against Deirdre. Say hello to Deirdre, Danny.
Hi, good luck to you too.
Five questions each. Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. If we're in a draw situation, we go to a tie break. Good luck. Let's go. So, Deirdre, first question for you. On this day in 1701, Pietro Longhi, famous painter, was born in Venice. In which European country is Venice?
It's Italy.
It is. Correct answer. Danny, on this day in 1887, Oscar Bazert, or Bozert, I should say, industrialist and chocolate manufacturer, was born in Brussels. In which European country is Brussels?
Belgium.
Yeah, easy start for both of you. Question number two for you, Deirdre, is an audio one. Have a listen to this.
Gather the faithful. If it's a war Aslan wants, it's a war he shall get.
Okay, on this day in 1960, Tilda Swinton, British actress, was born in London. She played the White Witch in that 2005 film version of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. You heard a clip there. In what fictional land is the film set?
Neverland, is it?
No. Narnia, we were looking for there.
Yeah.
Narnia. Okay, early days. Danny, yours is an audio question as well. Have a listen to this.
Well, I'll think of some way to get in there.
On this day in 1913, Vivian Leigh, English actress, was born. That was a scene from one of her most iconic films where she played Scarlett O'Hara. Can you name the film?
Gone with the Wind.
Is the correct answer. Deirdre, your third question on American politics. On this day in 1996, Bill Clinton was re-elected President of the United States, defeating Bob Dole. Which party did Clinton represent? The Republican or Democratic?
Republican?
No, he's a Democrat. A Democrat.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, no problem. Danny, similar question for you. On this day in 1968, Richard Nixon was elected President of the United States, defeating Hubert Humphrey. Which party did Nixon represent?
He was a Republican.
He was a Republican. Now, you need to get the last two questions right, dear, just stay with a chance and hope that Danny gets his final two incorrect. Your question four is an audio one. Have a listen to this. So on this day in 1941, Art Garfunkel, American singer and actor, was born in New York. Can you name his partner in that musical act you've just heard? Something and Garfunkel.
Simon and Garfunkel.
Is the correct answer? Yes, Paul Simon. Right, you're back in with a chance, but if Danny gets this right, we have to say goodbye to you. Yes, it is, yes. it's Gates, whatever they say. Right, have a listen, Danny. There you go. No, it's true.
Everything I do, I do it for you.
So on this day in 1959, that singer was born in Ontario, Canada. Can you name him?
I can't. It's all come to me.
No. Brian Adams. And that song from one of the Robin Hood movies was famously number one for 16 weeks or something like that. Okay, so it's down to the wire. Deirdre, you're on two. Danny, you're on three. Deirdre, get this correct. You put Danny under pressure, but if he gets his final question correct, then he wins. If not, we go to a tie-break situation. Good luck with this. Deirdre, on this day in 1964, the US launched Mariner 3 towards Mars. What is the diameter of Mars? Is it 6,792 kilometres, 16,792 kilometres, or 26,792 kilometres? The diameter of Mars.
We'll go with 6,000.
That's a guess?
And yes.
It's correct. 6,792. Look at you. Now, Danny, she's put it up to you. Yeah, you're under pressure now. Answer this one correctly, Danny, and you win. If not, we go to a tie-break situation. Good luck with this. Danny, on this day in 1994, space probe Ulysses completed its first passage behind the sun. What's the diameter of the sun? Is it 1.3 million kilometres, 2.3 million kilometres, or 3.3 million kilometres?
3.3 million.
It's 1.3 million kilometres. So look at that. Huh? It's a draw, so we go to a tie-break situation. Lads, okay. Good luck with this. It's a guess. This one's going to be a guess. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question. Deirdre, I need your answer as quickly as possible, and then Danny as quickly after that, if you can. On this day in 2018, Shallow by Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper was at number one. How long, according to Spotify, is that song in minutes and seconds? Deirdre.
4 minutes and 45 seconds.
Right, 4 minutes and 45 seconds, you say. Danny.
3 minutes and 60. 3 minutes and 59.
3 minutes and 59, yes, because 3 minutes and 60 before minutes, yeah. Okay. The correct answer is 3 minutes and 35 seconds. So, Danny, the prize goes to you. Sorry, Deirdre, you did so well to come back. You did really well. Yeah, we're going to send you out a Ray D'Arcy Show mug.
Thank you so much, Ray, and it was lovely to speak to you.
Yeah, lovely to speak to you as well, Deirdre. Mind yourself and
thank
the family.
You very much.
Okay, see
bye
you
bye.
Now. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Danny, well done.
Thanks, Ray.
You sound like a man who needs a break with all that driving. So you're off to the K Club. Do you play a bit of golf?
Yeah, I haven't played in a while now.
No, but you'll enjoy that. It's the simulator. You don't need to have to go outside and get wet. So enjoy that. And drive safely, Danny. Mind yourself.
Thanks, Ray. Thank you.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now we're going to be speaking to author and comedian David Baddiel in a moment. But first this. Billy Eilish on RTE Radio 1. Future Friend is the new book from David Baddiel, and David joins us on the line right now. How are you, David?
Hello, Ray. How are you doing?
Good to talk to you.
Yeah, nice to talk to you as well. How's things in Ireland?
We're at level 5. You're in official lockdown, aren't you, from last night?
Yeah, I don't know the difference between level 5 and official lockdown. It's probably in the small print. but basically, yeah, we're not meant to go out except for essentials.
Yes.
There's one good thing about that at the moment, which is probably happening there as well, which is everyone is stuck watching CNN or re-clicking their computers to find out when the American election might finally move on to a result. And that might go on for a few days.
Yes. You were tweeting about Jo Jorgensen. Tell us about that woman. Do you know anything about her?
Nothing at all. Well, I was. I've been tweeting almost continually, partly because I'm stuck inside, about the American election. And I noticed that there is another candidate. I don't know if people know this, and I don't mean Kanye West. She's called Jo Jorgensen or Jorgensen. And she is picking up, like in Nevada, for example, 10,000 votes. And elsewhere, I think, like, you know, very small amounts of votes. But because it's so close, she may be the deciding factor between Trump winning certain states and not. And apparently she is a big anti-masker libertarian candidate. So if she splits even tinily the Trump vote so he doesn't win, I suspect she may have to win a mask, certainly in Trump states. Otherwise she'll be very much chased out of town.
Yeah. Now, your book, I love time travel, so there's a bit of that in the book. And you sat down to write this before lockdown, but you imagined a world that is not too dissimilar from lockdown.
Yeah, it was really a coincidence. I know people might not believe that, but it was. I started writing the book, which is essentially a book for 8 to 12-year-olds, which is my readership normally. And I've never written a science fiction book before. So I had this idea that a girl from 3020 comes back through a time tunnel into now and becomes friends with the boy from now. And then they have to work out a way of getting her back to her own time. And here's the thing. I imagine, not very originally in some ways, 3020, where she lives, as being this world that's kind of dystopian and people live in tall towers. And because of climate change, and indeed because of mutant viruses, no one goes outside. So she's never been outside. She just has to live indoors the whole time in 3020. And the idea was that she comes back to now and has a great time. She can go out, she can party, she can meet people, go to school. And suddenly she couldn't. I got to like March of this year when I was writing, and I thought, she can't do any of this. So I fixed it quite easily by making her come back to 2019. But I thought, how long, you know, is this how it's going to be like for all fiction from now on? Unless you don't, if you don't want to deal with the pandemic, you have to stop at sort of December 2019.
But here's the thing, because we know this, aficionados of time travel, that you don't mess, you travel, but you don't mess with anything. You know, you know, like if you met yourself, for example, you don't say hello to yourself. But not without giving away too much about the ending of the book, she does sort of mess with it in that she influences Rahul.
Well, I mean, you're right. But although I think that idea that you don't mess, I mean, for example, I don't know if anyone's seen the Harry Potter stage play, but I think that's bent a lot, certainly children's time travel fiction. And I think I think the point is, if you are going to go back in time in a fiction, which, by the way, is the only way you can do it.
I was just saying, here's two 56-year-old men discussing time travel as if it was a real thing. Go on.
I'm taking it very seriously. But I think if you are, and the universe you come from is dystopian, then... And without wishing to give anything away, then maybe you might try and do something in the past that might fix a few things in the future. But hey, I can't talk anymore because it feels like I'm on the edge of a spoon.
Yes, yeah. Okay, what about yourself and time traveling, if you could?
I haven't done it. I've got to be honest. I have to take something down, but I've never done it.
Yeah, I'm actually time traveling this weekend because I used to be a children's TV presenter, and because of the lockdown, they're bringing back the program that I started doing 30 years ago. So that's akin to time traveling.
Actually, you know what? I mean, you can experience it in a way. I mean, I did this weird thing the other day. I was talking about this on the radio the other day. I turned down quite a lot in my life, right? I turned down Strictly Come Dancing, for example.
Right.
But I accepted the other day, this bloke is doing a thing about ruined buildings. And there's a gym near me that I hardly went to anyway, because of course I hardly ever went to a gym, but I did used to go there. And it's now disused. And he wanted a photograph of me in swimming trunks by the disused swimming pool that I haven't been to for 12 years. And I said yes, because I thought it sounded unusual and interesting. He sent me the pictures now. They're very depressing indeed. But while I was there, I did think, wow, it does feel like a weird, disjointed, like, journey into the past, this.
Yeah.
And if you go somewhere where you haven't been or haven't, like, experienced for a long time, you do have this weird sense of, you know, going back in the past?
You do.
Am I in a dream? You sometimes feel like you're in a sort of dream.
It's a real feeling. I've experienced it. It's a real feeling. Now, you mentioned already that you're a fan of Twitter and you're constantly on it. And you were
not
doing...
constantly, but too much.
Too much. Not constantly, okay. And you were doing a show pre-lockdown, which you will continue next year, which was about social media.
Trolls, not the dolls,
Say again?
The show, well, I've done these shows and they're all called Not the Something. So I did a show called My Family, Not the Sitcom, Fame, Not the Musical, and this was called Trolls, Not the Dolls.
Aha, yes, right. Okay.
Meaning not the little plastic dolls with the big
head. I know. My granny used to have one. I know them. Okay. Ugly little yokes, And maybe the same could be said of, no, I better not say that.
Indeed.
So where are you at then? Because you've a 19-year-old and a 16-year-old or thereabouts. And they don't know a world without sort of social media as such.
Yeah.
And how do you think it's shaping them as human beings?
Quite weirdly. I mean, my daughter is pretty good with it, I would say. She is not on social media the whole time. My son is on parts of the internet that I don't even know about, Twitch and Stream and, TikTok and places like that. He's not so much, I would say, well, it's a bit like living with the trolls just because he's a 16-year-old boy. Yeah. So I don't know if you've had a 16-year-old boy in your life.
No, I don't.
Essentially, what he does all the time, I mean, in real life, not on the internet, is sneer at me. And that is what the people on the internet do to me. But I live with that. I have to, because he is the fruit of my loins. But he basically, he loves memes is what he loves. You know? So he sort of almost talks in memes and tells me about memes and shows me memes. And most of the time, I don't really understand it. But I don't know. It's a weird one. I think as two 56-year-old men talking about this, like time travel, as you say, is you can come across like just amazingly out of touch to be too worried about it. But I am worried about it, but I also think, well, that's their language, just as our language might have been punk rock, whatever it might have been.
I just get a sense that this is seismic. It's not like the arrival of television or whatever. You know, it's something bigger than that. Do you not?
I agree with that. I think it's a shift in communication that is even bigger than television, I think.
Do you not say to your 16-year-old son, do you not know who I am? David Baddiel. I was one of the coolest comedians ever. I had my own television.
You really think I would say that? I mean, there may be pockets of unself-awareness in my psyche, but I think I haven't got the stage of saying to my 16-year-old, do you know who I am?
I know.
That would work for you. Oh, yeah, you're so cool, Dad. I never realized that.
I can hear him now. I can hear that. Yeah, yeah. And when you started writing books for this age group, which you said 8 to 12, and Future Friend is the current book, and you've sold over a million. Of course, your two children were critics as such. They were your audience.
Yeah. Actually, my son, the aforementioned son, when he was a sweet little boy, of which there's virtually no remnant left now, but he was, he said to me one day, he said, Dad, why doesn't Harry Potter run away from the Dursleys, which is the horrible family he lives with when he's not at Hogwarts? He says, why don't you run away from them and try and find some better parents?
Yeah.
And that gave me the idea for my first children's book, which is called The Parent Agency. And it's a world in which children can choose their own parents. And he's every so often asked for a royalty.
Yeah, which you haven't given him.
I've never given it. There's enough money from me already. But I do think it's important that I had kids and then started to write children's books because, you know, I believe that everyone is a child inside, really. There's very few people who are the age they actually are. Only, I believe, Michael Gove is actually 15.
What age are you then? The final question.
I think inside I'm about 14, right. I think.
Okay.
I've got time for this. I've got a theory about how you know what your inner age is.
Right, you have 20 seconds. If you can put it in 20 seconds, go for it.
Oh, God. There used to be a thing, it was probably in Ireland as well, called a film programme. It was named after the year. Right? And like film 82, film 86, okay?
Oh, yes.
Whatever you think that program should be, that's how old you are if you take it away from your birthday. So what do you think it should be without thinking? Film?
90.
Okay, so when were you born?
64.
Okay, so that makes you, I'm terrible at maths, that makes you...
Minus 26.
26, that's quite old. Mine is about 82, which makes you about 14 or something, or 15 or something.
David Baddiel, future friend, we have to go. Great talk to you as always. Good luck with the book.
You too, right.
We talk
all
to you
best.
Soon. Bye. That's it from us. Sarah McInerney and Cormac O'Hara are on the way with Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening. Where are we going here, dear Maja?
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.